recording is on.
Thank you. On the call, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the 7th of September, the IRTPB call. And we have Rob Golding, Michele Nilon, James Bladel, Kevin Erdman, Paul Diaz, Mikey O'Connor, Michael Collins, Bob Mountain, Barry Cobb, Oliver Hope, and Matt Serlin. And for staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Glenda Sanjoki. Thank you very much, Michele. Over to you. We have apologies, sorry, from Simonetta Batiga.
She's on holidays or something, I think, isn't she?
That's right. And Bodwan Shombi is still on another call, and he will be joining us as soon as he's off that call. Thank you.
And we also have apologies from Anil George.
Thank you, okay. Marika.
Thank you. I think Bodwan's on the last call that I was meant to be on, but I didn't
attend.
That's
right, yes.
Yes. I'm very bold. And you're all very patient with me, and nobody gives out. I think it's great. Okay.
And your
then.
Apologies have been noted for that call.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, our agenda for today is up on the Adobe Connect. However, we need to add one item to the agenda based on the email that was circulated within the last hour or two. I am, of course, referring to the email on disclosures of interest. You all have provided at some point, or at least you should have provided, a statement of interest. And now we're looking at this thing which is called the disclosure of interest, which is part of the various revisions to the GNSO working stuff. Glenn, you're on here, aren't you? She was there, wasn't she? Or maybe I'm imagining things. Marika or Glenn or somebody?
This is Marika.
Was Glenn here, or am I imagining things?
Yeah, she is, but she might have jumped to the other call, I guess.
Ah, okay. I'm not losing my mind entirely. Did you all receive the email from Marika, which was forwarded on from Glenn? Has everybody had a chance to read through it? Or maybe phrasing this better, is there anybody who hasn't had a chance to read through it?
Chris here. I have to hold up my hand on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, Mikey here. I'm reading as we speak.
Okay, so, Marika, could you walk us through this, please? Because you're probably more familiar with the ins and outs.
Yes, this is Marika, that's fine. Basically, recently the GNSO adopted some revisions to its operating procedures, which require the GNSO Council as well as GNSO working groups and work teams to provide a written disclosure of interest. And basically, disclosure of interest is defined as relevant to a specific issue at a specific time, a written statement made by a relevant party of direct and indirect interest that may be commercial, example given monetary payment, or non-commercial, example given non-tangible benefits such as publicity, political or academic visibility, and may affect or be perceived to affect a relevant party's judgment on a specific issue. What is explained here as well, I think if you look, for example, at the GNSO Council, they discuss a number of different issues, so they are requested prior to each meeting to look at the agenda and to declare their interest in relation to those issues that are being discussed. As working groups are typically focused on one single issue, I think the assumption is that most of that information should already be captured under the statement of interest that is submitted at the start of a working group. However, as part of this new process, chairs are requested to ask at the start of every meeting whether there are any updates to this disclosure of interest, and working group members are asked then to state that if they indeed have any updates, and if so, to provide those in writing so that those can be amended to the statement of interest.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Now, is that any clearer for anybody, or are you all more confused now. Come on, own up. Mikey?
What?
Are you confused, or does that all clear for you?
I'm always confused, Michaela.
Yeah, I know.
Thank
you. I knew you'd say that.
I'm fine. I get this.
Okay.
So we're going to do the thing that we used to do in the calls, just do it in writing instead of on the call, right?
This is Marika. No, you're basically requested to, Michaela should say, I think after the roll call, or Glenn can take that task, asking, are there any updates to the disclosure of interest? And then you're supposed to indicate if you have an update, and you can share that already with the group. And then after the call, you're requested to share that also in writing so that it can be added to the statement of interest.
Okay.
So Marika, just so I have this slightly clearer in my poor little head, and bear in mind that my brain is slowly decaying. The statement of interest should now also include the declaration of interest. Is that correct?
As I understand it, and I have to admit I wasn't involved in developing this process, that as I understand it, in certain cases your statement of interest will cover any information that a separate declaration of interest would contain. So if you don't have anything else to add to your statement of interest relevant to the issue that's under discussion, there's no need to file a separate disclosure of interest, as I understand it. So it's only if, for example, to give a more practical example, like if this working group would suddenly start discussing issues related to vertical integration, just to say, which, you know, wasn't covered by the initial statement of interest, which is focused on, you know, the charter questions and then the issues the group is dealing with, then you're supposed to say, well, if we're now starting to discuss vertical integration, I actually need to make a disclosure of interest because, you know, I own a registrar and I'm planning to run a registry, or in that manner. So that's how I think it should be seen. So I think in most cases in working groups, as a statement of interest will cover your
declaration of interest as well. Okay.
Yes. So that's how I've understood it. But as noted as well in the email, I think the work team that has developed this concept is still doing further discussions on what actually should be contained in disclosures of interest and statements of interest. So further updates might be coming forward in the next coming weeks or months. I'm not sure how quickly they'll go. So I think this is, you know, we're starting this process now to already, you know, make people aware that they are supposed to have, you know, be aware to declare their interests up front. As I said, you know, there might be further details or changes going forward, but hopefully this won't be too painful.
Okay, then in that case, I think based on my understanding of this and looking at the current SOI I have, I may need to update mine, for example, just to make it a little bit clearer. So I would just add that something about how that we're looking to make as much money as possible out of everything, because we're capitalist swine and we're proud of it. Would that be acceptable?
Filthy.
That's what you should state.
Sorry?
I think if you just make the capitalist swine statement, that should cover it all.
Yeah, that's pretty generic. Or, you know, going for filthy lucre. That's another good broad statement.
Filthy what, sorry?
Filthy lucre.
Lucre? I don't know. I don't understand that one.
That's an English word. You get to look that one up.
Okay. Is this English or your idea of English?
Yeah, no, it's English.
And how do you spell that?
L-U-C-R-E.
It's like King James English.
L-U-C what?
R-E, I think.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay then, Rob, you've your hand up.
A declaration of interest is something along the lines of, and I also personally own a number of domains, and I'm very interested in making sure that they're not stolen from me.
Okay. I think, James, do you want to add something to your statement of interest?
Not to the statement of interest. I do have a question regarding this process, and maybe it's something Marika can or cannot answer, and maybe some feedback she can take back to that other group. But the question would be that I understand the intention behind this request, and it is understandably reasonable. But the question I've had, and this is the problem I've had with the statements of interest as well as the declaration of interest, is that I don't know that there's any person or organization that's actively checking or verifying these things. So, for example, if I were to say that my new declaration of interest, I'm, the president of Canada, or some outlandish claim like that, I don't know that anyone would be verifying that. Similarly, and I think more likely is if I were not declaring all of my interests or withholding something like that, I don't know that there's anyone out there checking that or verifying that. So maybe that's one piece of feedback we can take back. I mean, I understand we're doing this and we're doing this again, but it seems to me that that's only half of the equation if there's if there's no follow up. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, James. Marika, do you have anything to say in reply to that?
This is Marika. I actually had a similar question because I asked internally as well the question whether, are there any penalties involved, like if you don't indeed state your interests up front or don't regularly update them, but I haven't received those funds yet, so I'll definitely take that back and try to find out whether indeed there's I doubt that there's any provision for, having a staff member calling up companies or governments to see what people are doing and then, what to do. I think it's a question as well of course, trust and honesty there. But I don't know if there's anything foreseen or that if that's still part of discussions, if people do find out that statement of interest are not correct or intentionally things have been omitted from it. But as I said, I'll check and I'll come back.
All right,
okay,
thank you. And I understand that, that may not always be possible, but I think that having this mandatory honor system seems a little silly as well without that, without something behind it.
And for the record, I'd agree with James. Mikey and then Chris.
Mikey here. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. Marika, that was my thought too, is what's the consequence? Is there any consequence if you mislead people with these? So, just one vote for your idea of finding that out. It's a good idea.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, the consequences, Mikey. Getting caught with your pants down and being drummed off the group by Michelle and the rest of us.
I think
maybe there isn't any strong compliance on this, but it's better than nothing. And the statement of interest is there in the public domain on a date, and I think there's an onus on everybody to update that before the call if you have to. And having also looked at the agenda for today, I can say that I don't need to do a declaration of interest because there's nothing on the agenda that would need to be added above my statement of interest. Thank you.
Okay, does anybody else have any other comments on this? Marika, if you could come back to us with answers to the queries that have been raised with respect to one, just see if I've captured this. One, is anybody actually checking any of this? And two, what, if any, penalties, real or otherwise, are there if group members either make a false declaration or an incomplete declaration or whatever? If you could let us know, that would be appreciated.
Okay, we'll do.
If anybody has any obvious updates to their declarations of interest, disclosure of interest, rather, does anybody want to share those now? Mikey, you have a hand up.
Yeah, I should share one. I was looking at my SOI. One of the things that's interesting is that the statement of interest is pretty focused on your job and what you own. And So my statement of interest doesn't really pertain to this agenda, but my declaration of interest is the same as the one I think Rob came in with, which is I've got some pretty valuable generic domains that I want to make sure aren't stolen, and that's the reason I've been involved with the IRTP all along, is to ensure that that process can be as secure as possible. So that should go into my statement of interest, and I'll write that up for the list.
Thank you. Marika, Chris, I'm assuming that's an old hand, is it?
Yeah, apologies.
That's okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just coming back on the statement of interest, I think that's as well an area where a specific working team is working on, and indeed better defining the questions and categories that people need to provide information on. So I think that's something that's forthcoming, and probably, you know, at the time when that's adopted, working group members will be asked to update their statements of interest to reflect the different categories and questions that have been identified as part of that effort. And I already got some feedback on the question of penalties and checking. Feedback I got that indeed there's nothing of the kind. The statement of interest and disclosures of interest are intended to be positive transparency mechanisms that encourage the discussions and parties so that they know each other's interests. My colleague is suggesting that, of course, a working group could agree up front that, you know, there might be any, you know, rules in relation to that, or if people abuse the system. But at this stage, there's nothing really foreseen. And I think, as Chris said, you know, misleading information might, you know, result in public shame or loss of reputation if people feel that it's intentionally done. So nothing. I mean, if the group has any suggestions, I'm happy to take those back to that respective work team to see if they could take that into consideration.
Marika, this is Michele. Just the only thing, I mean, similar thing to what James was saying, I mean, I would also wonder, I mean, what is the point of having rules if there's absolutely no penalty of any kind whatsoever if we don't abide by the rules? I mean, I can't see the point. I mean, why would I bother? I mean, this kind of, I don't know, what did James refer to? This kind of honor system is fine in theory, but in reality, I'm not sure that it really works. Mikey?
I'm not quite as grouchy about this. I think that it's very useful to know where people are coming from. And,
that's not what I meant, Mikey, at all. I'm not talking about the actual statement of interest or the declaration. I'm talking about the idea of any kind of rule. If there's no censure for a breach of the rules, what's the point of having the rule?
I think, in a way, it's kind of like manners. You know, there's no particular censure if you're impolite, but it's a good thing to do, nonetheless. I mean, except in yours and my case, of course.
Well, yeah, no, it'll be out of character for us to do that.
Yeah, present company accepted.
Thank you, Mikey. Rob and then James?
If you consider it a best practice rather than a rule, I think that would be a different way to look at it. I mean, I have no problem with telling people where I stand on any subject or working group or anything else, and I would hope that the other members of the teams are giving as much information out. If they're not, I don't really see that, I don't know, having some sort of witch hunter general going around looking for people who haven't declared something is actually going to help. But I like Mikey, it helps me to know where people are coming from if they said why they're doing something.
Okay. James and then Marika.
I, real quickly, and then I'm not going to speak any more on the subject, but, you know, I would say, Mikey, you're correct, except if you think about those possible cases where an interest that is not disclosed is also most likely to be the most meaningful interest that you need to know about someone's participation. So I think those two kind of go hand in hand, and that's why I think the honor system in this particular mechanism failed. So I'll just leave it at that. And I'm not calling for a witch hunt or anything like that. I'm just noting that there's human nature. I mean, it would, there's certainly incentives in what we do to have folks looking for ways around the different rules and procedures, certainly if there are no consequences.
Marika, and then Mikey.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just another thing, I think there's a lot of discretion as well for the working group and the working group chair, because I recall as well in past instances, for example, where working group members did not provide a disclosure of interest despite numerous reminders, where, for example, it was decided to remove that specific member from the mailing list and just assume that they weren't interested in being a member of the working group. But I also think, to James' point, I think there's also an assumption that in most instances where members are participating in working groups and have a specific interest or stake in the issue. So I think that's the underlying thought of the statement of interest and disclosure of interest, that there's nothing wrong with having an interest, and it's probably an assumption that most have a specific interest, either financial or just out of personal interest in the specific issue. So I agree with Mikey that I think it's you're working with people together and then hoping that people take that seriously and then express indeed and state their interests up front when participating in these groups. And I'm not aware of any instances where people have come to ICANN or to staff saying, well, I saw the statement of interest of that person and that's factually incorrect, can you please go and check or call them out on it? So I think so far the system seems to have worked pretty okay, unless people haven't paid any attention to it, and we find out that there are false statements out there.
Okay. Mikey, then Paul.
Yeah, this is Mikey. James, I don't feel terribly strongly either way on this. I think the thing I feel strongly about is the, at least on consequences, I could go either way on that. But I think it's very useful to keep the statement of interest thing, and I think even if there wasn't a sort of legalistic or rules-based consequence, there is a consequence in terms of loss of credibility, because, this is an awfully small community, and if somebody was consistently misleading the rest of the community, that word would get out and spread pretty fast, and the trust in that person would go down. And the nice thing about having this SOI-DOI thing is that it means that people have to say it as opposed to just remaining silent. And the consequences, I could go either way.
Okay. Paul?
Thanks, Michele. I'm sorry, I've been multitasking, so if this was already raised, please cut me off, but for Marika, when you go back with your short list of questions about this stuff, my question is, do these rules apply to the council? Do councilors have to provide a DOI before every meeting? Because in my view, that's the level that can have the most damage if these sort of true secrets about what folks may be up to or doing behind the scenes are not publicly disclosed. There are certainly council members who have signed on to working groups, and I can almost assure that the statement of interest that's provided is far from fully accurate, and I just want to make sure that if the rest of us involved in this policy work are going to do these things on a regular basis, that the councillors are also held to the same standard.
Okay. Marika, do you have any comments on that?
Yes, well, Marika. Just to confirm, this also applies indeed to GNSO council members, and I think they actively started this process on the last council meeting, and they'll also receive this note, because in the beginning there was some confusion on what was expected if every member individually would be asked on whether they had a disclosure of interest, also what kind of information is contained in it. So I think now for the call that's tomorrow, some further information like the working group has received has been shared with the council members, so hopefully that will work better as well. I think that the idea is as well, once this process is ongoing, there will be a better idea as well of what is expected, because I think that question has come up from council members as well, like what am I supposed to state, how specific do I need to go, and I don't want to reveal any business strategies or confidential information, so how detailed or how specific should it be? And I think that's, you know, probably rule of thumb, and then we need to learn by practice to see how that works. And again, I think if working group members feel that certain statement of interest or disclosure of interest are not accurate, I think the appropriate process would be to either escalate that through the working group chair or the council liaison, so that person can reach out individually probably to that person saying, look, we feel something is missing. This might be unintentional, but you know, can you look into it? And as you'll note from the new working group guidelines, that they're still in a draft form, but hopefully we'll get to a final form relatively soon. There are certain procedures in there in which certain issues can be escalated through certain processes. So where indeed the council or the working group chair is the first stop, and then an issue can be escalated as well up to council level. So there should be certain ways in which these things can be addressed, even if there's no strict procedure in place where someone is scrutinizing or following up on statements of interest. But again, I don't know, you know, that might be an issue that needs further discussion, and maybe at some stage there is a requirement that further follow-up is done. I mean, one thing I know is that, for example, when people submit statements of interest or apply for a working group, Glenn does check back whether those are actual persons. Because that's, you know, has been another discussion. How do you know if, you know, someone is not creating five different mailing accounts pretending to be five different persons? So there are some checks that are being done by the GNSO Secretariat in that regard.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Let's move on from this. If anybody has any other queries, can we just continue this on the mailing list? I'm getting some weird audio thing here. Bob, are you here?
I am.
Okay. Bob, as you're the only one of the two of the pair who's on the call today, could you walk us through this, what you're proposing to send out?
Sure. Yeah, it's pretty simple. I think
Sorry, just one second. Paul?
I'm sorry to cut in, Bob. You know, it would really help, I think, in the interest of time. Can we post up Barbara's redlined version of Bob's stuff? Because for me, there's no point going through the original. Let's go over what she's suggesting. It seemed there was agreement around it, and it seems silly to go over something just to have all of us start ripping apart and then go, oh, but Barbara's ideas were great.
This is Marika. I think Barbara made notes in her email, and it wasn't a red line, and at least in my email, it didn't come out very well. So I'm not sure if I can...
Spare me 1 second.
Pull it up.
Is Barbara on the call?
No.
No, I don't think so. Okay.
Something I want just to ask you.
Okay. Hello, yes, who's this?
Yeah, I want just to ask something, because
Who's speaking? Sorry, who's speaking to me?
Is it Baudouin?
Oh, sorry, Baudouin. I didn't know who was speaking. Yeah. Go ahead.
I want just to ask something, because since the end of this week, somebody among us will be in Vilnius. I don't know if we can make some modification of day and hour of call.
Of this call next week, is it?
Yeah, next week after we will be in Vilnius.
Okay. Would you just email the list with the dates, and we can, and then I can liaise with Marika to see if we can either reschedule the calls or just to see how many people are impacted by this meeting, by the IGF meeting.
Michaela, maybe we can just do at the end of the call a raising of hands who can attend the next meeting.
Yeah, that's fine. Regarding the red line thing, Marika, you said you can't really see the red lines. Is that what you're saying to me?
I'm seeing, I think she did it in the email, and that doesn't come up in the mailing list. I'm seeing that in my email it is, have I have read, but it doesn't strike out any of the other words. It's just adding in, I think, comments. I can try to pull it up if you like. But I need it.
I can see the red line here. I can read it out if you want. I mean, it's if you look at the paragraph, where's it gone to? The line says, we would like to share the following thoughts with you about this topic. Barbara's suggested wording is, we would like to gain your insight on the following topics. For question number four...
Hey,
yes?
Hey, I'm sorry, it's Paul again. I hate cutting in like that, but just, Bob, a simple question for you. Do you accept Barbara's suggested edits as friendly amendments?
I did. I thought they were all great.
Then let's just put that up there and read straight off it. Who cares if we see it in red or whatnot?
Yeah, I think the problem is that Marika can't actually see it in red. So that's the problem, Paul.
Who cares? Let's just read it through.
Yeah,
put that version up on the list,
okay.
Though.
Okay. That is actually on the list. Marika, can you put up the redlined version with the edits, or do you want me to send that to you?
What I can do now is put in a note what Barbara sent, and then you can work out if that's the... Because it doesn't have, I think, the strikeout. It just has then the full text like that.
Okay.
Does that work?
Yeah, it'll do. That'll do it. Yeah. Okay, so she's put up the thing there. Okay, so this is the full text, including the red line, so we just need to strike out the bit. So the question is, we would like to gain your insight on the following topics. Question number four, how were they resolved? Question number five, what tools and processes would you recommend to prevent or resolve domain hijackings? Are you familiar, question number six, are you familiar with the expedited transfer reverse policy, ETRP process, as proposed in the initial report on the inter-registrar transfer policy, Part B, policy development process? Question number seven, if yes, please provide your comments about ETRP. Question number eight, what other suggestions on the domain registration and transfer process do you recommend that would make it more secure and less prone to hijacking? James.
Hi, McKelly. Thanks. James speaking. Real quickly, I like Barbara's edits. I think that they're getting right to the heart of these questions. I had a couple of quick suggestions. One would be, is there any way that we can frame some of the latter questions so that we don't get something as useful as ETRP is awful, I hate it. You know, that we're getting something back that is a little more constructive in terms of a positive, what would a safeguard look like? And I think that that's in the last question. And then finally, just one thought here, just off the cuff, is how many domain name hijackings have you experienced or would you normally experience in a year? I'm not sure that is going to prompt the same understanding from different folks. I mean, I think that if folks have experienced it once, they would feel that it's very common. And folks that have never experienced it but have heard of it or have perhaps been solicited a name that has been hijacked might feel differently as to its frequency. So I'm wondering if we can't restate those first two questions in some way to reflect not necessarily personal experience but more industry awareness. Thanks.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions on the wording for that, James?
That's a tough one. Bob, any thoughts or...
Okay, well, I'll move on down the queue. We've got Bob, and then we've got Mikey.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, James, that the reason we were asking for specific experiences on point number one was just to try and quantify it if we could. So actually get some hard, reported data, but just try and get some. But I know what you mean, and perhaps there's a way we can get both, which is what the number you've specifically experienced. If everyone says, "Well, I've heard a lot about it, but it's never happened to me," then I know we're up against one thing, as opposed to, it happens to me every year, multiple times. So,
were to get something like, say, do you have any experience of domain name hijackings? Which is kind of an open question.
These will be in person, so we'll send these questions out ahead of time and then follow up with a call. So we'll have the chance to sort of poll and prod and get the, whatever information the group thinks is most important. We'll have the opportunity to talk directly with these folks and try and extract that. So,
Bob, do you have anything else to add on that at this time?
I do not.
Mikey and then Rob.
This is Mikey. Just to follow up a little bit on the conversation about those first two questions, one way to frame them would be to ask people for examples. And those examples could be anything. They could be newspaper reports or lawsuits or anything like that. One of the things that I think is useful is concrete information rather than personal information. I mean, personal information is fine, but I think it's more useful for our group if we've got concrete examples of things. So you might think about rewording them that way. And then I think the other thing I really want to amplify in what James said was that, I want to make sure that we share the same goal, that we're trying to reduce the impact of a hijacking on a legitimate domain registrant. That's what the ETRP is all about. And so if they disagree with that goal, I'd like to hear about that. If they agree with the goal, then I'm with James's comment, which is, okay, if you agree with the goal and you disagree with ETRP, then come up with a different approach that meets that goal. That's all we're trying to do. It's not as though we're trying to inflict pain just for the fun of it. This is just our best try. And so if folks have a better approach, we're all ears on that. Mm-hmm. So, get people focused on, A, whether they agree on the goal, and then, B, better ways to accomplish that goal. That would be my second comment.
Mikey, would be helpful if you have any particular suggested wording, you could share it with the list maybe afterwards, would be helpful.
Yeah, I can do that.
Thanks. I mean, it's just the concept is great, but, we need to try and get some suggestions to poor Bob. Rob and then Matt.
I'm thinking that statistics are going to be a lot more useful than opinions. So, I would change things like number two, how many would you normally expect to experience in a year? Everybody hopefully will say zero. So how many did you experience in 2009? And follow it along those lines. How many domain hijackings have you been involved in? How many did you experience during this set time period? Question four, you might find that not everybody can answer question four depending on how they were resolved. So you might want to say, if you're allowed to share, can you explain how they were resolved? Were they done to your satisfaction? And things like that. It's just raw numbers, I feel, are going to be a lot better than, well, I heard about this bloke down the pub who had this really good domain name and it was nicked from him.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Yep.
Matt?
Thanks, Kaylee. I think all the comments on the survey are good. I think the survey itself is good, but the question I have, and I apologize if we've covered this in the past, is there a rationalization behind just approaching the aftermarket folks with this? I appreciate that Bob volunteered to do this, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm just wondering if we're going to get just one perspective on this, and is there a reason why we're not making this a broader sort of survey?
James might be able to answer a bit to that, but I can tell you from being at an aftermarket event,
in Dublin a couple of weeks ago that there is definitely a perception within the, what's the politically correct word I'm going to use to describe Domainers this week? Bob, what's the politically correct term? Can I call them Domainers or do I call them Domain Investors?
Investors.
I think, yeah, Domain Investors is more PC, but yeah, you could also call them colorful.
Okay. It doesn't matter. I mean, like, some people would consider me to be a Domainer anyway, so, you know, whatever I call them.
Quality.
Sorry?
Registrants of unknown quality.
Registrants of unknown quality, okay. There is a general perception within the aftermarket that the various proposals and things that we have come up with to date will have a very, very negative impact on their business, industry, way of life. So this was part of the reason, I think, that, you know, trying to get some feedback from that particular sector was considered to be worthwhile. James, go ahead.
Yes, really quickly, Matt. When McKaylee was absent, so I take full blame, responsibility, or credit for this. And I thank Bob and Simonetta for volunteering. But, you know, he's got it exactly right. When the ETRP proposal draft hit the streets, there was a lot of activity and comments in industry press, in the public comment forum, and just in general general feedback from the secondary market. And I think that there was some concern that we were perhaps not taking a fully balanced approach to both the primary and secondary market. Now, that having said that, we did make a point to say that we shouldn't allow necessarily concerns in the secondary market to drive policy in the primary market as well. But we wanted to take a more balanced or more comprehensive perspective and wanted to be sure that if there were better ideas in that market or practices that were currently ongoing, that we were capturing those as well and that we weren't just throwing out drafts operating in a vacuum. So that was the genesis of that idea, and since we had some new expertise on the working group from Name Media and CETO, we wanted to leverage that as much as possible.
Thanks, James. Matt, does that kind of make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't completely make me totally comfortable with it. I mean, I wonder if there's a better or a different mechanism by which we could distribute this that would get a broader response. I understand the rationale behind, you know, addressing the folks that have spoke up the most about what we've proposed, but I think in doing so we run the risk of of not listening to people that necessarily didn't speak up so loud. So Marika, well, or Michaeli, is there a way by which that we could distribute this to the broader community that folks would be open to?
Matt, I can understand where you're coming from, but I've seen the reaction. Okay, basically, just taking a step back for a second. Can any of you, off the top of your heads, think of a single comment period that ICANN has opened in the last 18 months that has got more than a handful of comments?
Not including XXX?
XXX.
Please include XXX. That's the only way you're going to get the thing, right? I mean,
this is Marika. If I can just provide a comment on the idea of a survey, we did get 412 responses to the post-expiration survey, which we ran as an actual Zoomerang survey and not asking people, you know, just submit your comments on this report, but actually ask targeted questions. I mean, my only concern is with these questions that, of course, are obviously targeted at registrars. So I don't know if it's better fed maybe through the registrar stakeholder group, and I don't know what would be the most effective way of trying to get responses there, if, you know, maybe making them anonymous or and mature, and you know, Matt, maybe you have ideas there, or James, or Paul, or any of the others. But we did get some good responses, just to the point, to the question.
Yeah, so Marika, hold on, though. So are you saying that this survey is targeted towards registrars?
No, it's not.
Because, yeah, I didn't think...
Oh, right, no, but you were asking to broaden it. I presume if you're asking about, you know, if you go beyond the domainers or the aftermarket, I was thinking that you would want to ask registrars about information on domain name hijacking.
Not necessarily. What I'm saying is Cito and Bob represent, you know, one portion of the market, but, you know, my company and James's company and Paul's company represent different types of restaurants. So I guess my concern is we're really only going after one piece of the restaurant pool and not necessarily a broader piece. So,
but that was intentional. That was actually intentional. The people who are active in the aftermarket are the ones who have been most vocal in their downright condemnation and outright criticism of the draft ETRP proposal that is there at present. So rather that the problem is that, okay, personally, the document that is there at the present, I'm not as happy with it as I could be, personally speaking. As a group, however, we should be trying to come up with something that does take on board as many views as possible. And since a particular segment was incredibly vocal about their condemnation of the paper, that's where this thing came from. So, for example, if we were to do another type of questionnaire, in inverted commas, say, for example, and direct it towards registrars, trademark attorneys, and what have you, dealing with, you know, the corporate type of market, you know, the questions that would be asked would probably be quite different. Because they're going to be dealing with something quite different.
No, why would they be dealing with something quite different? This survey is talking about registrants' experience in domain hijackings and their perspectives on what we've proposed. I think the same questions could be applied across every registrant.
I disagree. If you take a large corporate, are they going to be buying and selling domain names?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, are they going to be actively selling domain names? Is what I'm saying, as in, you know, turning over thousands of names per year.
But this doesn't talk about the selling of domain names. This talks about.
Yes, it does.
What question talks about the selling of domain names?
Number one.
How many domain hijackings have you experienced, either buying or selling? It doesn't say how many domain names do you sell in a year. I don't agree with the argument that a corporate client, such as one of ours, couldn't have experience in domain name hijacking, buying, or selling. But Bob has some... Michaela, I don't mean to jump you, but Bob made some comments here that I'd like to maybe see if he can speak to. It's just Matt, just not registrants, so I'm not necessarily sure I understand what that is referring to, so maybe...
Okay, Bob, and then James.
Yeah, I guess so... It wasn't in the note, but in the initial email, just so everyone knows, and maybe everyone does, but there were five cohorts. Domainers or domain investors were just one. Obviously, aftermarket marketplaces, registrars who are active in the aftermarket, domain brokers, even end users who use brokers. So we tried to get it beyond just, you know, pure domainers. If there are other elements, I might, you know, maybe Matt, to address this, we expand the number of cohorts a little bit or more to accommodate some other viewpoints besides just the ones we initially targeted.
Matt?
Yeah, there they are on the list.
Yeah, I see them. I still am not supportive of the idea of this survey being run by not through the normal process. I think it should be opened up to every to the registrar constituents, to the registrar stakeholder group, to the wider community at large. I don't see the purpose in just getting feedback from one specific group because they spoke up loudly. But I can be in the minority. That's fine.
James?
Hi, and to address Matt's point, and maybe I'm trying to thread the needle here between what Matt is thinking and what Bob is thinking as well, is that I never initially thought that we would go back and reach out to individual domainers or individual registrants. In fact, I thought that that would be duplicative of what we received in the large number of comments that we received. I was thinking mainly that we could target those marketplaces, auction providers, syndicates, etc., the places where these types of transactions are exchanged, and get their thoughts as a kind of a choke point on the secondary market, and get their thoughts as to how many how many hijackings they would expect to come in and mess up their inventory in a given year, etc. So we were really looking for that specific perspective, not the individual domainer. At least that's how I initially thought that. It sounds like that's what Bob is thinking as well.
Okay. Maybe this is something we might want to continue discussing a little bit further on the list, as that we're nearly at the end of the hour. Apart from Matt, who has already voiced his concerns on this, are there any other people on here, just by a show of hands, who have issues with the idea of circulating a questionnaire to specific groups or companies or whatever? Mikey does. Anybody else? Mikey, go ahead.
I was just raising my hand.
Okay, sorry. Right. I think best if we follow this through on the list. Now, Badouin raised an issue that next week is the IGF is on in Vilnius. Is anybody else going to be impacted by that?
Yes, just I want just to say because I know many people among us will be in Vilnius, but I don't know if we can have the same date and the same hour for meeting for teleconference the next week.
Okay, bear with me 1 second, Badouin. Yeah, go ahead, Marika.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to note that for next week, we already have a confirmation from Dan Halloran and Pam Lill and Mike Zupke to participate in a call to discuss charter question E, I believe. So to change that around would probably be quite difficult. So if there's no big opposition and we don't lose too many members, I would be cautious in cancelling next week's call.
Okay, apart from Badouin, is anybody attending the IGF next week?
Yeah, myself, I think I will be there.
No, I know I understood that, Badouin. But I am asking, is anybody else in this group attending the IGF? No, okay. As Marika said, we have organized other people to come join us the meeting next week to give various presentations, so I don't think we will be able to reschedule it if there's only going to be one person impacted. So, I mean, but the calls are all available via MP3 and everything else, so I'm afraid you might just have to listen to the MP3 recording afterwards. Does anybody have any other matters they wish to raise?
I want to see a picture of the dent.
I will have a look on. I'll have a look on my Flickr feed just to see if I have any photographs of the dent. There are plenty of photographs of rather bizarre things made from snow sitting on the top of the car, which I won't share with you.
if there's nothing further which is pertinent to this working group, I shall call this meeting to a close. And with respect to the survey thing and other matters, please continue the discussion on the list. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks,
oh, Rob.
Thanks,
Rob, go ahead. Rob, yes, you have a hand up. Quickly, Rob.
Yes, there is a requirement, I believe, from the RAA that when you transfer a domain, you also transfer the contact information. There was a mailing to the list recently.
Slow down. Where in the RAA does it say you have to transfer the contact information?
I'm waiting for my technician who believes it's in there when he went through it to find it for me and show it to me.
Okay.
But he's convinced that he saw that when he went through it with me before we joined them.
Okay, just bear me one second. Before we go any further, do any of the other registrars on this call know what Rob is talking about? Do any of you know if there is a section in the RAA, or have you all dropped off the call already? Damn. Rob, I'm seeing a suspicion that a lot of the guys have dropped off calls.
Yeah, in which case, I'll mail it to the list and get a comment back from there. Because if that is a requirement, and it's also been raised within this, that change of registrar is also used as a way of changing registrants, then there needs to be, even on Thin, who is like the similar things to where the Thick who is, that somebody's got to be authoritative of who the registrant is at any given point in time.
Okay. Well, look, just let's post that to the list, and then we can all try to... Okay. Perfect.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Kelly. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, McKaylee. Great
bye-bye.
Job.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for all.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.